You're listening to In the Vault, a KPMG banking industry podcast series.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to today's podcast. I'm Liz Lamadou, a principal in KPMG's Banking and Capital Markets Tax Practice. And today I'm joined by my partners, Jennifer Van Dalen from KPMG's Valuation Practice, Dave Hellenbrook from our M&A Tax Practice, and Tony Walborn from our Banking and Capital Markets Tax Practice. And our topic today is IRC Section 382 and current implications in the banking industry. So first off, Dave, Jennifer, Tony, welcome.
Hi, Liz. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for joining me. So on the topic of 382, I got to say that I sit with many others in this section that knows just enough to be dangerous. And from these seats, I see Section 382 covering ownership changes and certain limitations of tax attributes that can result from an ownership change. So typically when I hear ownership change, it's in the context of a merger. And the first limitation that comes to mind is a limitation on net operating losses. But I think the application of Section 382 is much broader, and we've recently seen some really interesting fact patterns and implications in the banking industry. So I want to talk more about those with you guys today. So, Dave, let's start at the beginning with 382. Why don't we talk through what's an ownership change and why it's particularly relevant right now in banking?
Sure. Thanks, Liz. So just to give a brief background on what it means to have a 382 ownership change, I'll kind of mention a couple key points. But won't go into excruciating detail because that would consume many podcasts. The general concept behind 382 is that there is an ownership change when greater than 50% of the equity of a corporation changes hands over a three-year look-back period. There are, like I mentioned, complex rules that go into making that determination. One of the key factors that goes into it is whether the, in this case, a bank, but could be any corporation, has 5% or greater shareholders. That's a key metric in the 382 testing, ownership change testing process. And then a second key consideration is whether the bank, in this case, issues or redeems significant amounts of equity over that three-year look-back period. If there's a significant enough combination of changes in the 5% shareholder ownership in conjunction with significant equity issuances or redemptions, there's a chance that a bank could breach that 50% threshold and have a resulting ownership change. Like Liz mentioned, we have seen some interesting fact patterns with respect to banks recently. The reason, we're talking about this today in the banking space is because obviously there was some turmoil in the banking industry in the spring of 2023. Anytime there's turmoil in stock pricing, that can lead to potential significant swings in ownership of institutions. And it could also lead to significant needs for, say, issuances of equity to shore up a balance sheet. So those depressed trading values that we saw in the spring could, in some cases, did lead to significant share trading activity. And in some cases, we saw necessitated equity raises to shore up balance sheets. So, for that reason, we had a heightened sort of scrutiny on the potential for 382 ownership changes. And, that certainly continues into the future, right, as institutions are looking for ways to shore up balance sheets, raise capital, things of that nature. Taking that one step further, there were certain cases, and use PacWest and Bank of California as a recent example. I think that was announced roughly a month or a month and a half ago. There are certain cases where entities actually do merge together, where the shareholder basis of two banks combine, and that of course is a significant change in the equity ownership of a bank. And frequently, well, I will say this: in every case where you have a stock for stock merger, nearly every case, one of the banks will end up with an ownership change. And depending on the three-year look-back period activity, it could be the case that in a merger of equals type transaction, that potentially both banks end up with a 382 ownership change.
That's something that we've run into in the marketplace. And I think, for those of us that don't spend, as much time in the space as you do, that was something that was maybe a little bit surprising. I think we probably all recognize that when a target is acquired, they've had an ownership change. Maybe can you clarify how both companies could have a change in ownership? And I think for that, maybe, revisiting the ownership shift rules for us.
Sure. Thanks, Tony. Again, the 50% threshold is the key threshold. So assume no overlapping shareholders in two banks that are going to merge together. One of those banks will end up being the survivor and will end up with a majority of its shareholders continuing on, and one of those banks will end up as the acquired with a minority of its shareholders percentage-wise continuing on. So if the survivors, historic shareholders, end up with 60% of the equity of the combined bank, that would suggest or indicate that there was a 40% 382 shift specific to the transaction. However, there is that relevant three-year look-back period. So if that surviving bank is coming into the present transaction with, say, a 20% ownership, there's a little math that needs to be done, right? Because the 20% will be diluted. But big picture, that 20% would have to be added to the 40%, get to something over 50%, and there would be an ownership change for the acquiring bank. And then, of course, for the target bank, whose shareholders only continue on owning 40% of the combined bank, there's going to be a 60% change in the ownership of that target bank. And so that will be over the 50% threshold. That would result in a 382 event. And then one other thing to mention, we talked about the PacWest and Bank of California transaction that just occurred. That was primarily a distress situation where that needed to occur in order to save the institution. But that's just one example, right? As the market improves, there's certainly expected to be in the next, depending on what information is out there, right? Many prognosticators expect there to be an uptick in deal activity in the banking space in the next, call it 6 to 18 months. So as that activity picks up, these same issues are going to be relevant as they would be in a distressed situation. So I just want to highlight that point, right? That anytime there's acquisition activity occurring, whether it's in a distressed situation or a bullish market, 382 is a relevant consideration in any of those acquisitions.
Thanks, Dave and Tony. And that's really helpful with the ownership change or shift, but that's really just the first part of a 382 analysis, right? And then the second piece is the potential limitations that can result from the ownership change. So can you talk us through what those limitations are and what you're seeing in banking?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's exactly the way we think about a 382 analysis, is there's really two steps to it. First question being, was there or is there going to be an ownership change, which is what we just spoke about. Then the second question being, okay, now once we've had an ownership change, what are the consequences? And like Liz alluded to, if there is an ownership change, there is a limitation placed on the tax attributes of the entity that had the ownership change. That limitation starts out simple and then becomes complicated. So the base limitation would be a calculation of the equity value of the bank that had the ownership change multiplied by a long-term tax exempt rate that's published by the federal government on a monthly basis. Right now, that percent is around 3%, just to use round numbers. So just to round out the example, if a bank were acquired at a time that its equity value was $100 and the long-term tax exempt rate is 3%, the limitation would be $3. And that would mean that that bank could use $3 of its pre-ownership change tax attributes each year until such tax attributes expire, and in some cases, NOLs recently generated don't expire. So essentially that $3 limitation would carry on in perpetuity.
So Dave, I think we all think about NOLs and credits when you talk about tax attributes, but I think one of the biggest issues for banks can be realized built-in losses or RBILs. Do you want to walk us through those rules?
Yeah, and that's absolutely right, Tony, is there is another piece of the calculation aside from that base limitation, and that is the built-in gain or built-in loss position of the bank when it has an ownership change. Very simple in concept, a little more difficult to actually calculate, but the basic idea is if the overall value of a bank's assets is greater than the tax basis in those assets, that's what we consider a built-in gain position. If the overall value of the assets is less than the tax basis in the assets, then there's an overall built-in loss position. And there's lots of additional complexity to that concept, but just to keep it at a high level for this discussion, that's basically the way the rules will work. Now, if there is a built-in loss position and some of those built-in losses are recognized, general rule is during the five-year period after the ownership change, the recognition of those built-in losses after the ownership change becomes subject to that a base 382 limitation that we just talked about a moment ago. This issue is really important for banks because, as we all know, banks have assets with a high basis, generally speaking, on the balance sheet, loan portfolio, right, being the most common. So to the extent the market takes a dip, market cap dips, equity values dip and drop, it can, and often does, right, we see this very frequently, push a bank into a built-in loss position because the equity cushion has evaporated relative to the basis in the assets. So that is something we've seen with a lot of our clients over the last 6 or 9 months as equity values dropped and banks have looking to build them off positions.
Yeah, that's right. And I think, so you hit the nail on the head, is that those, the loans with those bad debts are where we often see a pretty significant new bill. And maybe talk a little bit about some of the planning that's available and what that means then if we have a new bill and a transaction.
Yes, so certainly if you are in a new bill position at the time of the transaction, there are certain things to be considered. Postponing asset dispositions outside of the 5-year recognition period is certainly one possibility. Now, 5 years is a pretty long time, obviously, in a business cycle, so maybe that's not feasible. There is a special rule that we lean on quite frequently, and there is a special 1-year rule for bad debt deductions if the right facts exist. So loan charge-offs, for example, we've had a lot of clients that we've worked with to defer partial loan charge-offs outside of 1-year special recognition period. And to the extent a bank that has had an ownership change can plan into that, there can be a significant tax benefit to taking advantage of that special 1-year rule, which is certainly more palatable from a sort of business life cycle perspective than a 5-year holding period rule. You know, just to note, it's not a simple exercise, right? It's typically a loan by loan analysis. So a fair amount of work and tracing needs to go into that, but it can yield some pretty beneficial tax results.
Yeah. So just to jump onto that, I think an important industry issue for folks to consider is, do you have a conformity election in place? Here's a situation where that would work against you a little bit, because what Dave's referring to is we want to kind of get through that 1-year period. The best way to do that is to defer your partial charge-offs, which is something that would not be available to you under the conformity election. So something to think about as you approach some planning around bad debts in an acquisition scenario.
Yeah, those are all great points. And related to planning, is there also any timing aspect that can come into play in terms of the transaction itself?
Yeah, there certainly can be. Frequently, obviously, in the banking space, there's significant regulatory hurdles to overcome before a closing occurs. So that time between signing and closing tends to be extended over, multiple months, multiple quarters, sometimes more than a year even, right? Certainly a couple of things to consider there. The 382 profile of a target that's going to have an ownership change between signing and closing could change pretty substantially in that, 6, 9, 12, 18 month period, right? So that's something to really be aware of when you're thinking about closing a transaction. Additionally, there can be certain benefits that we can plan into from a tax perspective in terms of timing a closing, right? So a closing early in the year maybe better than a closing late in the year, for example, in the tax year, if that target is going to generate significant NOLs during that tax year, for example, by disposing of a bunch of assets. Definitely something to be aware of, definitely something that can be thought about. So to the extent there is sort of optionality in closing dates that, maybe tax could have a voice in, there's definitely some modeling and thinking to be done in that regard.
Thanks, Dave and Tony. And Jennifer, I want to turn to you now and valuation. And I can see where valuation is important to this analysis in several ways. We've talked about the impact of a depressed equity values for purposes of determining an ownership change or pretending future transactions. But I think the asset valuations also impact the amount of built-in loss and potential limitations. But can you talk to us about where else valuation plays a role?
Yeah, if I'm sitting in the seat of a tax director right now, or in kind of anybody from the tax department, and I'm thinking, okay, do I have to be prepared for 382? What does that look like? What would I do? The first thing, just from a valuation perspective, I would take a step back and I would say, well, do I expect some sort of merger or acquisition or decrease in my equity value to occur? And I think the market right now is setting a situation where it needs to be top of mind. It needs to be something that you're thinking about and what that means. So if we just look historically at the current market and what we would expect from a current market perspective, as you think about 382, acquisitions and mergers have been quite limited other than the ones that were announced kind of during the crisis back in the spring, right? So you had SVB, you had First Republic, you had Signature that were kind of acquired through kind of the decline within the market. That being said, I think that there is a look towards transactions starting to occur again. In July, you had the PacWest Bank of California merger announced. It has not closed yet, but that was kind of a reawakening and a reemerging of what's happening. So I think the market is starting to show mergers, acquisitions could occur. That means you need to start thinking about 382. As you think about going forward, though, and you think about the valuation of banks just in general, not only have you seen like the decline in the stock price, you're also seeing other market indications in regards to where there's softness. So Fitch came out in August and they said, look, we're downgrading some of the banks and we're looking at even our big five multinational organizations and saying, do they need to get downgraded as well? All of those indications would indicate an area where values of banks and equity values of banks are going down, which puts you back in the position of having to think about 382 as well.
Okay, Jen, so it sounds like we know transactions will likely occur. What do you think will happen in those valuations then for those transactions?
So I think we're going to see a couple of things, and you never really know until the transaction occurs, but I think there are two factors you really have to consider. If I were to just take a step back and we were to say, well, how does a bank make money? And when I say a bank, really what I'm meaning here is my super regional or my community or my regional bank that's sitting out there. And the crux of how they make money at the end of the day is really just the spread difference between what they can charge on a loan versus what they have to pay on deposits. I think in the current market today, with rising interest rates occurring, with the slowing of the mortgage market and the commercial loan market, the spread between those two numbers is shrinking, which means the profitability of my banks is getting less. As the profitability decreases, the value of your bank is going to go down. And I think that's why you're seeing kind of the stock prices go down as well. The faster interest rates can return to quote unquote normal, the faster the loan market picks up again, the sooner banks don't have to keep increasing their deposit rates to keep depositors within the organization means the value of those will go up. But I think over the short term, we're going to see values continue to decline at these organizations, which will drive the need for acquisitions to kind of stabilize equity within these organizations and then also fund things like technology that is super, super important within the organizations. I do want to highlight one of the things that David said currently or earlier in the podcast, which is the time between when you announce and when you get regulatory approval can extend, and it can extend over a period of time, and where you have uncertainty in regards to those two factors, so interest rates and loans and deposits and so forth, the likelihood of your value changing over the period of time is greater as well. So it is kind of something to keep in mind and keep going at what's happening in the market and how is it affecting my peers and how is it affecting my organization, because all those factors are kind of critical to your consideration of 382.
One thing I was thinking about as Jen and David were talking about each of your topics, and as we bring those together, one thing we have seen people caught a little bit unaware is if you have an ownership shift. So outside of a merger transaction, but just as, you know, maybe you have an actively traded stock and a significant 5% shareholder movement, one thing to watch if you are in a new bill or if you have other attributes, you know, for those ownership changes or shifts, you know, in a period where there might also be a depressed value. So I don't know if either of you have any real life experience from that or tips for folks to watch out for. But I think there are some perhaps concerns when we see things like, you know, values changing in March or some of the other significant events in the economy. Maybe just something to think about if that impacts you sitting in your departments. Jen or Dave, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's certainly possible, Tony. And we do see that from time to time. I think one thing to call out on that point is the new bill that we've talked about a little bit, because that tends to be a hidden attribute on the balance sheet, right? So NOLs, you know, most organizations are sort of aware of what their NOL position is, but that new bill position, it really is dependent for public companies on that fluctuating equity value. And in a depressed environment, that new bill can come into existence. That often coincides with a need for a capital raise and often coincides with a lot of trading in the equity. And so those things can sort of intersect when you're not really anticipating it to result in a risk, like you mentioned, that you have an ownership change and there's attributes that are limited that, you know, aren't immediately top of mind.
Yeah, I would just add to that, that given the environment that we are currently in, given kind of all the headwinds that banks have going for them, I think your biggest offense right now is awareness. Awareness of what is going on and awareness of these issues and just watching them. And the assumption that we don't have that situation is probably naive. If I were sitting in the chair, I would say the opposite, right? Do we have the situation and can we monitor?
That sounds like excellent advice. And I want to thank you guys for a great discussion today. Lots to think about for bank tax departments. You've definitely reaffirmed why a lot of us keep you guys on speed dial. So thank you again, Jennifer, Dave, Tony. And to our audience, thank you for joining us today. This is Liz Lamadou on behalf of KPMG's Banking and Capital Markets Tax Practice. I look forward to talking again soon.
Thanks for listening to In the Vault with KPMG. Be sure to subscribe to this series to be notified of new episodes.